The Apricity Podcast is sponsored by Apricity Marketing, bringing authentic, effective marketing to your business. Find out more at apricity.com. That's APRICITY.com. You're listening to the Apricity Podcast. The Apricity Podcast brings you interviews with the Ann Arbor area's most interesting entrepreneurs and innovators. I'm your host, Maggie Cease. Welcome to episode 8 of the Apricity Podcast. Today, I bring you an interview with Joel Panazzo, co-owner of The Lunchroom, along with Phyllis Engelbert. Joel and Phyllis started off hosting vegan brunches and dinner parties for friends in 2010 and then opened the Lunchroom food cart in the Mark's Carts courtyard in the summer of 2011. If you haven't already done so, check out my interview with Mark's Carts founder Mark Hodesh in episode 6. The Lunchroom food cart was so successful that Joel and Phyllis went on to open a brick-and-mortar restaurant in Carytown in August of 2013. And then, in February of 2015, they opened a second location, the Lunchroom Bakery and Cafe, in the first floor of Huron Towers on Ann Arbor's northeast side. In all of their locations, they've had a lot of success, and they were awarded Best Vegan or Vegetarian Restaurant in Washtenaw County in 2016 by the Detroit Metro Times. In our discussion, you'll learn how Joel and Phyllis went from being neighbors to business partners, what it was like to open a food cart and to start serving their food to the public, some of the differences between running a food cart and running a restaurant, a few of the businesses they looked to for inspiration when they were scaling up from food cart to restaurant, how Joel and Phyllis develop ideas for new dishes, and what lies ahead for the future of the Lunchroom. So now, please enjoy my interview with Joel Panazzo. So to start off, how did you and Phyllis go from being neighbors to being business partners?
Yeah, so we were friends first and then neighbors second, and then neighbors that cooked with each other third, and then neighbors that started a business together, or friends that started a business together. We originally became friends back when I first moved to Ann Arbor. And a roommate at the time was interning at the organization that she was directing called Michigan Peace Works. And so that roommate and friend brought me into volunteering with Michigan Peace Works. And then Phyllis and I kind of connected immediately and became friends from there. And we're friends for a couple of years. And then one day she called me up and said, "You're going to buy the house next door to me." I was renting at the time in town, and I was like, maybe this is a good idea. So I went for it, and then we were neighbors for a long time after that. And then we kind of hit like a similar, like, I don't know, kind of midlife crisis kind of thing, or quarter life crisis for me, at like similar moments. And that's when we really started cooking together in both of our kitchens. And then that kind of sprung the first concept of the Lunchroom. We started doing little pop-up dinners, meals. We did lunches, dinners, and brunches, mostly in Ann Arbor. We did one in a tattoo shop in Ipsy. Most of them are actually based in a business that's no longer in the now Ann Arbor distillery, where a floral studio called Pot and Box was. And that's where she, Lisa Wowd, the owner of Pot and Box, has had a little like common use space that she let all different types of people rent and kind of spark ideas of, there was like theater troupes and all kinds of fun activities that happened in the space.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So
So what sorts of work did you and Phyllis do before you met each other and started cooking together?
Yeah. So Phyllis, as I said, was working at Michigan Peace Works. Mm-hmm. And then and she had a rich history working in like nonprofit management. After Michigan Peace Works, after she left Michigan Peace Works, she moved into some other nonprofit organizations in Ann Arbor and then Detroit. When we started cooking together. And then my background is in graphic design. I did an art program at Eastern, and I, at the time when we started cooking together, I was doing graphic design at U of M. So that was kind of my change point when I was working in a basement for too many hours a day with like no natural light. Yep. In front of a computer screen. Both of our personalities do not do well in front of computer screens. Mm-hmm. All day. So it was definitely a point for both of us to kind of move on from those type of backgrounds and kind of start something new. We didn't really know what we were starting.
Okay.
I mean, when we ordered like some lunch trays off of eBay. Mm-hmm. And like said, like, we're gonna go with like this funny like cafeteria lunch tray concept where, yeah, with the pop-up meals, we just serve like a 5-course meal on the lunch trays. Mm-hmm. And then we called it the lunchroom at the time, not really knowing that like not that much time into the future that we would be starting a food cart. We didn't really know what we were starting. We were just experimenting with food and kind of just trying to challenge ourselves as much as possible. At that point in time of doing the pop-ups, we had no idea we were starting a business.
Okay.
And the business kind of just happened. Like, we saw an Ann Arbor News report of the food cart courtyard starting. Mm-hmm. And like,
Over in Mark's Carts,
yeah. Yeah, right by downtown Home and Garden. And a number of friends like sent us emails of the news report and said like, this is you have to do this.
Wow.
And so yeah, we kind of applied on a fluke thinking like, oh, we'll just fill out the application. Yeah. And see what happens. And it was, we got an email like, the day of like one of our pop-up meals where we were like cooking in the kitchen trying to get ready for like a Valentine's dinner that we were doing, and we got it in the middle of it and we were kind of just both starting freaking out. I remember like collapsing on the ground thinking, aww, like, what's going on? Are we really doing this? Because I mean, jumping from pop-up meals to a food cart, it seemed at the time to be a pretty big leap. Mm-hmm. The leap that we then did from the food cart to the restaurant was a ginormously large, a much larger leap. But at that point in time, we definitely didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. But we went for it. We emailed Mark Kodesh back and said, we'll try this. We'll start building a food cart like today. Mm-hmm. So we basically, from that email, just started putting together as many resources together as we had, and menus, and scouring Craigslist for anything that resembled a food cart. We ended up finding like this little, I wouldn't even call it. It was like a stripped down camper trailer that, mm-hmm, someone took the trailer off the top and then started building like a cabin walls off, oh, the trailer. But, mm-hmm, there was like no interior walls and there was no floor in the trailer. It basically just had wheels and like some cedar walls that people would now recognize as what used to be our food cart, which is, yeah, still over in Mark's Carts. It's, I think, a seafood business now.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
So we drove to Kokomo, Indiana to pick up this like shell of a trailer. Mm-hmm. And bought it from a man named Reverend Joseph that was going to basically use it as like a gypsy wagon to like go around the country. He was like a palm reader.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a different type of reverend. But so it seemed appropriate at the time. So then we bought the shell of the trailer and kind of just built a food cart out of it.
Wow.
And that's kind of like when I would draw on, like, us starting to build, like, the lunchroom community. Mm-hmm. That's when we really started reaching out to friends and, like, everyone in our Ann Arbor area network of, like, let's do this together. I would say from the beginning of building the food cart, it was never just, like, Phyllis and I. It was, like, okay. a community of folks from the beginning.
Yeah.
So we had multiple weekends of work parties where we fed people vegan food, and they came out and, like, helped us install walls and windows and mm-hmm. paint and, yeah. So
yeah, it makes me think of, like, a barn raising almost.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a food truck raising. Yeah.
It was, like, a similar, and barn raisings, I think, used to happen over, like, a really short period of time. But this was, I mean,
yeah.
It was, like, multiple weekends of barn raising. Uh-huh. It was incredible. And it's great to see, like, those people that installed, like, our walls and our windows and the food cart are still, like, weekly regulars today.
Oh.
Like, they still come into the restaurant and they get their regular menu items. And it's incredible to feel like it's much larger than us. That it's like, this is their community space too. Like, this is where they bring their family when their family's visiting town and kind of mm-hmm. say, like, this is my restaurant.
Yeah.
It's great to have, like, in community, like, investors, like, sweat equity investors, not necessarily, like, money investors just in the business.
Yeah. Wow, that's so cool. I never knew that whole piece of it. That's awesome. With the lunchroom food cart, after mm-hmm. it opened over in Mark's Carts,
yeah.
it had a lot of success. So you were voted best food cart in Current Magazine Reader's Choice Awards. So when you first started serving food to the public and not just to friends and family who you had been serving to before, was there anything memorable or surprising about the way it was received?
Yeah. I just remember feeling not necessarily prepared for, like, the influx of customers. Like,
okay.
you said, like, it was a lot different going from serving food to family and friends to serving to, like, the common public, and then kind of embracing our role that we were kind of introducing a new food concept to Southeastern Michigan, that we were showing people that, like, you can eat satisfying full meals without any animal products in it.
Mm-hmm.
When we started just cooking in our personal kitchens, we were just, we didn't, like, look at the concept of veganism as something limiting. We kind of saw it as, like, this is, I think when you start experimenting with vegan cooking, you kind of, your brain can kind of open up into, like, endless possibilities.
Yeah.
Because when you use, like, smother something in cheese or some type of rich dairy sauce, it's not necessarily a cop-out, but it's, like, a very understood flavor that people are comfortable with tasting and feeling. Like, it's a simple use of creating a dish. And mm-hmm. I think, like, when you limit yourself with removing animal products, it kind of opens yourself up to, like, finding fresh herbs that you've, like, never even heard of or never pronounce, and, like, digging into, like, like the rich culinary basis of, like, Asian foods, of, like, digging deep in and finding, like, tempeh, that's, like, an Indonesian product that's been used for, like, generations and generations, like, hundreds and thousands of years. People have mm-hmm. been using tempeh, and, like, finding, like, products like, or fruit, like jackfruit, that's, like, a fun and, like, not necessarily meat substitute, but, like, a hearty, nutritious, yet, like, super flavorful, like, sponge. Like, that's what I love about tempeh, tofu, jackfruit. Like, there are these wonderful, like, flavor sponges that you can, like, mm-hmm. marinate with, or, like, slow cook any type of, like, flavors and herbs and seasonings. Like, you can do, like, amazing, like, powerful power-packed dishes with them.
Yeah.
And so back to your question of, I think, just finding, it took a little bit of time to find our footing and with, like, convincing people that, like, vegan food, specifically our menu, could be, like, a lunchtime, like, destination that you could come and you could buy, like, a $6 noodle dish and feel full and, like, not, like, heavy at the end of it and go back and work your afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when we really started baking at the food cart and realizing that, like, our baked goods were kind of going to be our gateway drug into the rest of our food.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what we still use our bakery case today as, is, like, even if you're walking into our restaurant and, like, you don't understand what tempeh is and you don't, and every form of tofu that you've had in the past has been poorly prepared and you think you don't like it, at least you're going to, like, look at a giant layered cake and, like, realize that, like, this is a place that I can at least enjoy, like, a sweet dessert. And that's, I think, what we use, like, our cookies at the food cart is like, getting, like, even if people ordered food from another food cart, they would come over and grab a cookie from us.
Okay.
And then they would maybe after eating that cookie, they would think, like, oh, this is really good. Maybe I could actually eat lunch here tomorrow.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Oh, that's really interesting. So after operating the lunchroom food cart, you went on to open the lunchroom brick and mortar restaurant in Carytown in August of 2013. So that's coming up on 3 years. That's
three
awesome.
3 years have flown by.
Yeah. So what did having the food cart first allow you to do that you wouldn't have been able to do if you had just opened a restaurant from the get-go?
Yeah. Even though, like, our Carytown restaurant is on the smaller side, like, our kitchen is pretty small that we cook out of, and it only seats about 34, 37 people inside of it. Mm-hmm. If Phyllis and I were going to jump from the pop-up meals to a restaurant that size, I think, like, we probably maybe could have made it work, but it would have been, like, a massive leap that I think we probably wouldn't have been prepared for. And I think the step with the food cart in between kind of created, like, a launching pad for us, and, like, the food cart courtyard was definitely, like, an incubator for smaller businesses. And the food cart definitely gave us the community base for opening something larger and opening something that was brick and mortar.
Okay.
Like, the amount of regulars that we were able to create from the food cart gave us a base, like, a base clientele that most businesses, like, small businesses, when they start, you don't have, like, a base clientele that knows, like, the flavor of your food and knows which menu items they enjoy and, like, are going to be there on your opening day ordering those things and coming back repeatedly.
Right.
And I think it's what new restaurant concepts have a hard time doing, is just, like, creating a customer base that kind of gets you through that first hump, that gets you through the first 6 months and that first year. Like, the food cart definitely gave us a customer base that, like, even if the tempeh Reuben that they had, like, when the restaurant first opened was a little, like, maybe it was a little too toasty, or maybe the sauce was off while we were still shaking out all of our processes, like, a normal customer, maybe if they hadn't had any experience with us, would be like, oh, that sandwich was bad, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
But, like, that having that core group of people that would be like, that was maybe just an off day. Like, I'm going to come back and I'm going to try something new and, like, I'm going to find a menu item. So I think just having that clientele to have at our doorway opening day was, I think, what really, like, launched us through, like, the the growing pains of opening a business that size. And even when we were building out the restaurant, we were getting to the final stages of build out and kind of costed out like what build out was going to be. Mm-hmm. And everything is always, I tell new business owners, if you are putting together a budget and a timeline, double both of them. And that's how long it's going to take. And that's how much money you're going to spend. And so like as we were getting like our couple weeks before we were trying to open, we needed additional funds to like kind of get us through the final leg of it. And we did kind of a similar to like a Kickstarter concept where we sent out like a campaign to our clientele from the food cart and like our family members and friends and said like, how about you buy a meal plan up front and spend like $100 and then we give you $110 worth of food once we open and you can spend down from that meal plan. So a couple weeks before opening the restaurant, we did that. And then we had other perks where you could come to like an opening party and stuff like that. Okay. But we were able to, I don't know the specific figure, but we were able to raise almost like $13,000 or $14,000 just to get us through the final leg. And I think that's like the community of people that I'm referring to that kind of like got us through that like last couple weeks of build out and got us to opening day.
Cool.
But it's created like this vested clientele base.
Yeah, and so that allowed you to get that money up front that you needed, and that was really a result of that community foundation, like you mentioned.
And it wasn't like money that had many strings to it. It wasn't like, it didn't have like a percentage interest that we were having to like pay down. It was kind of like people are going to come and eat regardless, so you might as well sell this meal plan kind of concept.
So what would you say is the biggest difference or a few of the biggest differences between running a restaurant and running a food cart?
The biggest differences I would say is just sheer quantity, like the amount of food that we're selling from the food cart and the amount of food that we're now selling from the restaurant is like vastly different. And the amount of food that we're prepping each day. When we first started the food cart, it was mostly like Phyllis and I who were, we were selling the food, we were assembling the food, we were preparing the food, we were doing the dishes. And we had some staff members, like Phyllis's son has been with us since the food cart days and still works shifts today. And we had some other type of like more part-time employment at the food cart. But now at the restaurant, scale it up, we're about 35 employees now. Yeah, so it's not just like Phyllis and I anymore. And it just, it takes a lot of people, a lot of hands, a lot of like love and labor hours to make food that's made from scratch and made from ingredients that are grown locally and grown and products that like are made locally too. So we have a focus on sourcing as many products as we can locally, like our tempeh and our tofu all come, like the tempeh and sauerkraut come from the brinery, which is only a couple miles up the road, but like our tofu comes from Royal Oak, from Michigan Soy Products, and like we use Michigan sugars and sweeteners and maple syrups. And this past season, we've even started growing our own vegetables.
Awesome.
My partner's family has a some land near Ann Arbor. So we're growing kale and tomatoes and herbs and zucchini and all kinds of things at the farm there.
That's
so
awesome.
Now customers are actually in the restaurant eating things that we've grown ourselves, which is pretty exciting. Because I in the past, even in the food cart, I've focused a lot on buying as much produce as we can from the Ann Arbor Farmers Market. And now being in the location we are, like I can literally walk out the back door of Carytown Market and Shops and I'm inside of the farmer's market, which has been an incredible asset. So like on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, I spent almost $400 in the farmer's market buying like 100 pounds of tomatoes and 15 pounds of kale and like all kinds of veggies and 70 pounds of cabbage, like it, and then like hauling it physically back there myself. So if I feel like that, I hope, is what people taste in our food. It's not only like good ingredients, but it's like a lot of like energy that we've put into it. Like it's not some type of like processed food that I think tastes a certain way. I think when you eat our food, you can really taste like the freshness and like the love, hopefully the love that we put into it.
Yeah, definitely. I can attest to that.
Okay, good. That's great.
Absolutely. So when you were creating plans for the restaurant, specifically the one in Carytown, were there any businesses that you looked to for inspiration when you were in that process?
For sure. I think there was definitely non-food businesses and food businesses that we looked for inspiration. Literati opened at a similar time as we did. They beat us by a couple months to their opening. And they have been like an inspiration from day one of like how to start something with like nothing. They created a beautiful intimate space in the building that they're in now. And I think what they've done with their social media and the connecting with their clientele, I feel like people, the Literati clientele, like knew they were missing something in downtown Ann Arbor. They were missing a place to go buy new books in downtown. And I feel like they connected with like a broad group of people of like, we are going to be your destination for that. We were, with our clientele, I think we were just having to show people a little bit more that you actually are missing like something that's fresh, sustainable, locally grown, and like made from scratch. And like you are missing it in your lunchtime regimen or your dinner destination. And like, we're gonna be that spot for you. So it's definitely grown over time. I think Literati definitely hit the ground running, and we kind of have grown our clientele with showing people what fresh and what made from scratch food can fill the void in their lives. I think food businesses, we started a number of years after Eat. They share Eat Catering and Carryout has a location at Packard, and they had a catering business before the food cart courtyard. So we, from day one, looked to them with like every single question in the business of like accounting questions to like, what type of food pans do you use? What are the best spoons? I think from day one, they have always been a business that we've looked up to. And they've done an incredible job, I think, with also connecting and filling a void in the Ann Arbor food scene.
So in February of 2015, you and Phyllis then went on to open the Lunchroom Bakery and Cafe in the first floor of Huron Towers. So how did you decide it was time to open this second location, and what does the second location offer for you and allow you to do?
Sure. The second location kind of happened out of necessity. I think even from day one of opening the restaurant and bar in Carytown, we were crunched for space.
Okay.
Like our preparation kitchen is pretty small. So basically a customer walking into the restaurant sees almost conceive for themselves all of the area where food is prepared and assembled. There's mm-hmm. a small work table behind the wall where we do dishes, and then there's a preparation table that's also really small. And from the moment we opened, the bakery was kind of based out of that back preparation table where like the dish machine opens into the legs of the person that's standing there. Yeah. And it's still a small space, but back in the day when we were trying to bake all of our own breads and bake all of our own baked goods mm-hmm. in the same space that we were doing this large menu, it was just too much. But we kind of did it, even though it was too much, for like a year and a half by the time we opened up the bakery and cafe. Mm-hmm. So we came to terms probably a year into opening in Carytown that we were going to need more of a production space. Not necessarily a retail space to sell more food. We wanted to find a space like within the Carytown neighborhood where we could kind of maybe even like roll the food back over to the restaurant.
Yeah.
And as people know, the Carytown neighborhood is pretty small and there's not a lot of real estate there. Mm-hmm. So we were looking in the neighborhood, and then during a busy like Friday night dinner, Phyllis got a call at the restaurant, and it was a person who works at the Huron Towers asked Phyllis in the middle of a busy dinner rush, "Do you want to open up a restaurant at the Huron Towers?" And Phyllis said to that person, "Maybe I'll just call you back." So we called her back the next day, and we then looked at the space the day after, and then the day after that, we signed a lease to open there. So it happened really fast, because rarely does a business like ours get a call like saying, "Would you like to open up a turnkey space a mile and a half away from your current location?"
Yeah.
So I think Maureen from the Huron Towers, who called us that night, had no idea what she was really offering us, like what need she was possibly fulfilling for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we just jumped at it. And it's a little tucked away back off of, it's off of Fuller Road, it's on Fuller Court, uh-huh. but it's like sandwiched in between the beautiful Huron River and the VA hospital.
Yep.
There's an intense concentration of people in the area with the U of M Medical Center and the VA hospital and all of U of M North Campus.
Mm-hmm.
That there's all these people and not a ton of places to eat up there.
Right.
I mean, you can only eat so much Panda Express during yeah. your week. And so it's taken a little bit to have people find us at the bakery location
mm-hmm.
and have people get from like U of M North Campus over to the bakery location. The VA hospital clientele was like immediate, because they can literally see our sign from the building
mm-hmm.
and it's the most convenient like place for them to eat at. And so it's been a totally different customer base that we've tapped into, and we've kind of had to like learn about them and their eating habits and like the time periods that they come for lunch and like, so it's been an interesting challenge. But the bakery business has grown drastically even over like the past 6 months. And so what we once started as just like we thought the bakery would be more of a production place to produce things to be sold at the restaurant. It's mm-hmm. turned into like its own animal.
Yeah, with its own clientele.
With its own clientele, yeah. It's been great to watch happen.
Yeah. So I know your role in the lunchroom has changed a lot over the time, mm-hmm. you know, since you and Phyllis were just friends cooking together to now when you have 35 employees and two locations. If there were a typical day for you at this point in time, what would that look like?
Yeah, the typical day is interesting. It still involves some computer time. I would say the day starts with like getting caught up on emails in the morning and understanding like the schedule for the day with 35 employees. You kind of, it's like a puzzle that you're trying to put together in your brain of like, how is lunch rush going to happen and who is going to put together dinner special and what is dinner special going to be, mm-hmm. and who is going to cook dinner special and like how do you train the person on dinner special. Phyllis and I have kind of created a fun challenge for ourselves with dinner specials, yeah. of like that's kind of our point in our work week where we get to experiment, and I think, yeah. where we really get to like connect back with food, because like the normal menu has become like solidified, I think, okay. and a lot of customers have found like their favorite things on the menu, but I think the dinner specials is like our creativity point of like where we get to try new recipes and work with new vegetables that we've never used and find random farmers market hauls of things that are being harvested at that time. So mm-hmm. A huge part of our day is probably just understanding what is going to be the special that night, okay. and how it's going to be put together by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So and the rest of it kind of is mixed in with just being at the register or being out on the floor or cooking food on the line ourselves. We are definitely owners that work like that you can visibly see at the restaurant and mm-hmm. at the bakery every day. We are invested into seeing how our business grows and changes and being there for every moment of it. It creates for really long hour days and really long work weeks, but I think it's definitely the most alive that I've ever felt in my life. It's wow. It's physically taxing and emotionally it takes a lot out of you, but it also is like, this is what I've created. I've created this yeah. this crazy thing that serves hundreds of people a day.
Yep.
Food.
Yeah, and you mentioned the dinner specials. So for that, it's every day of the week you have a different theme for the dinner mm-hmm. special, right? And then it's a totally new dish every day.
Every day. Sometimes yeah. we repeat old favorites that customers have really enjoyed.
Okay.
But at the restaurant, Monday through Saturday, we have different themes. And then Phyllis and I kind of break things apart from there, like what nights she'll take and what nights I'll take. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy Wednesday nights is Asian night, mm-hmm. and it's really fun. I don't really plan what it's going to be that night, and in the morning I go to the farmer's market. I find whatever type of like Asian greens or herbs or whatever vegetables I can find at the farmer's market and start mm-hmm. piecing together things from there. I'm sure some of the farmer's market stalls kind of, because I kind of walk up to the table and just start staring at their vegetables. I'm sure I look weird. At least I have an apron on usually at that point, so I yeah. hope they at least understand that.
I'm sure they're used to that.
Yeah. But I just kind of stare at the table and start piecing together things in my mind of like, am I going to do a noodle dish or am I going to do a rice dish or mm-hmm. what type of things am I going to use? So, yeah. The dinner specials are always really, really fun. And I think it's where our consistent clientele base, where they get to constantly taste new things mm-hmm. as well as their like old-time favorites. At a certain point, it's turned into like a fun challenge. I think when we first opened the restaurant, it was more of like, ugh, I have to figure out what to make for dinner special. But I feel like on top of everything else, yeah. and like two people have called in sick, and like the dish machine isn't working, mm-hmm. and like somebody's burning something in the oven. I feel like we've now grown into the point where like my business partner Phyllis is incredible with like creating policies okay. and like formulas for like how the madness happens every single day. Mm-hmm. And as the years have passed, we've like really solidified what policies make the machine work, mm-hmm. and putting them into place and just like following them and constantly fine tuning them. With our staff, like our policies are like, they're like Play-Doh, they're constantly molding into something else. And we try to like focus on making things as expedited and smooth as possible. And so we look for feedback from our staff like all the time. Anybody on our staff can walk up to us and say like, actually, I think if we did this way, it would make things so much more smoother and it would cut out these three steps in the middle.
Yeah.
And like instantaneously on the spot, like Phyllis and I will be like, yes, that makes so much sense. Let's do it that way. And I think just doing that and creating that type of malleable system from the beginning has really changed and made our business grow into the ability that it has now. I think the amount of people that we're able to serve at the restaurant when we first opened is vastly different than like the amount of people that come in during lunch rush. I mean, customers will see it during lunch rush. There's often no place to sit inside or out. And then there's to-go orders and phone orders and all online orders and all of these things happening. But I think the policies that we're able to create have really made the madness possible.
Yeah.
It's been a fun scientific equation to figure out.
So you touched on this a little bit. So the lunchroom serves a lot of creative and original dishes, mm-hmm. not only as part of the everyday ones, but as the dinner special, as you had mentioned. So I was wondering if you could just go a little bit more into the process of how you develop ideas for new dishes, mm-hmm. and then translate that into something that goes onto the menu.
Yeah. I think Phyllis and I both work in a way of like keeping ourselves open to like food trends and food concepts and like constantly going through recipe books and online stuff and like seeing, mm-hmm. I'm very inspired by like the brand new things that pop up at farmers market that farmers have never grown before, and they're coming to me and saying like, you have to try this, I've never grown this before, but I read about it here and you should make a dish out of it.
Yeah.
So I think that sparks creativity. I think I personally work in a way of like, I have traveled to some city and have eaten a dish at a restaurant or even restaurants in town. I'll get inspired by a dish and kind of like do internet research of like recipes and like look at four or five different recipes for a single type of dish and then kind of just pull the best parts of each recipe and kind of make my own out of that. And then from that like type of trial and error, like continue to make the dish again after that and again, and kind of fine tune the recipe from there and kind of make it ours, mm-hmm. and not just like a recipe that we've read like verbatim out of a cookbook.
So you've said, and I've read online, that your work with the lunchroom embraces certain values. Mm-hmm. So values like creativity, fun, social justice, and community. Could you describe a little bit more in depth what each of these values means to you?
Yeah. So I think the fun part of it has been like a pillar of our business from the beginning. I think in the workplaces that Phyllis and I have both worked in the past, we maybe discovered like a lack of fun. Not necessarily a lack of fun, but like definitely there's more opportunities to have lighthearted laughter in your work day.
Yeah.
And there's ways to like work hard and still enjoy your coworkers around you and enjoy the customers that are walking through the door. And I think that's what we encourage our employees and encourage each other to like include it in your workday. Like, I'm never going to stop an employee for saying, like, you have talked to this customer for way too long, and like you've been laughing for way too long at this customer.
Too much laughter.
Yeah. I think our employees definitely find an appropriate mix of like laughter, fun, and like hard work within their workday. The social justice component has been important to us from the beginning, and just what we're doing now with our contribution to the community. We are doing a 10% donation of all of our Saturday nights each month of the year. Mm-hmm. We started this in January or February. It's all a blur. Mm-hmm. No, I think January. Where we, all of the sales on every Saturday night from 5 to 9 goes to a nonprofit within the community that we feel like is doing good work. This month we've been doing 826 Michigan, which does literacy and tutoring work with schools in Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, and Detroit. Mm-hmm. During the height of the Flint water crisis, we were donated to a fund that's doing like a long-term look at how to address the health crises of the children that are growing up in Flint, and Ozone House and Planned Parenthood. And that's been an incredible way to like give back and feel like we aren't just like donating a platter of sandwiches. Like, we're able to actually like donate like a significant chunk of money that could actually give an organization like Ozone House the ability to like enact significant change in the community. Mm-hmm.
So, looking ahead, mm-hmm. What's on the horizon for you and Phyllis in the lunchroom?
Looking ahead, I feel like this is the kind of the first year right now where we haven't been like opening something or starting something.
Okay.
I think in October will actually be 6 years that we've been doing something called the lunchroom. And I feel like over the previous years, we've always been like starting something, opening a new location, growing in a certain way.
Yeah.
So I feel like now I feel like we're just, for the first time, standing in the place that we are and experiencing it, and mm-hmm. like trying not to open up a new place, but like really fine tune our systems and our processes, and like figure out how to continue to make great food and serve like as many people that are walking in our doors. Like our this past February in 2016 was our busiest month on record in the middle of the winter time, which was kind of wild. And then March was the busiest month, and then April was the busiest month, May was the busiest month, and June, and like right now in the week of Art Fair, we're already on record for like being the busiest week of the business.
Wow.
So I feel like now we're just trying to, we aren't making growth happen. Growth is like happening to us.
Yeah.
So I think we're just trying to catch up with ourselves and feel out like what we want to do with this growth. And I think like some of the things I've talked about of like doing donations with our 10% program on Saturday nights, and like growing our own produce, and starting up an investment program with our employees so they can start like an IRA.
Okay.
And like just like simple things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to start to think about retirement plans for your employees when you first start a business.
Yeah.
But now, like with the growth that we're experiencing, I think we kind of start to get to do some of these projects that we have been thinking about forever. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yes, we've always wanted to give our employees retirement plans, but now we are actually able to like start doing things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So What does being in Ann Arbor mean to you and the lunchroom?
Ann Arbor is a weird, quirky, fun place. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up on the other side of the state in southwestern Michigan and moved to town a little over a decade ago. And Phyllis moved to town in the mid-80s. And I think for both of us, it's having traveled significantly, like all over the world, it's a town like no other town in the world. And I think the energy here, Phyllis and I both connect with. It's like a really good mix of neighborhoods and like people that are invested in their community and like natural spaces. Like Phyllis and I both live on the north side, and like the river is like so important to us, and like the trails around the river, and just being able to like walk out our front door and get on a path into wilderness in like a matter of minutes is like something I think you can't really do in larger cities. And I think you'll hear people say that like Ann Arbor is like the biggest small town, and I think it's true. It's a tiny town, but it has like a big heart, I think, yeah, of like of bigger cities. And I think it offers a lot of like the amenities that people look for in larger cities, like integrated like public transportation. I think like the public transportation in Ann Arbor is like incredible for like the size that we are.
So how can people find out more about what's going on at the lunchroom?
So there's a lot of changes, like I said, with dinner specials and like menus and other specials during the week. The best way to stay tuned is on any of our social media. So if you go to our website, thelunchroomA2.com, you can then get connected to both of our websites for the bakery and cafe and for the restaurant and bar in Carytown. And both of those are Tumblr blogs. So they are where we post all of our specials. So if you go to our website, you'll see what is for dinner special that day or what special thing is in the bakery case. And it's the same on our other social media, which is Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'll connect people with what is happening in the restaurant that day.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with me
today,
Joel. I really appreciate it. And thank you for all the work that you do.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining me for my conversation with Joel. Check out the show notes for links to the lunchroom website, where you can find more information about the restaurant, its menu, and even see the exciting dinner specials each day. Until next time, thanks for listening.